Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. In just 100 years or so, obesity has become a global epidemic. Worldwide, more than 1 billion adults are overweight, and of those, at least 300 million are obese. It was once considered a problem of only wealthy and developed countries. Rising obesity rates now are seen in poorer countries as well, side by side with malnutrition and in epidemic proportions. And because obesity is a major contributor to the global healthcare burden for chronic disease and disability, it affects everyone. What can be done about it? Joining us today is Dr. Manuel Pena. He is a representative of the Pan American Health Organization. It's part of the World Health Organization. His official title is Coordinator of Alliance for Pan-American Nutrition and Development for the World Health Organization. Welcome to the show, Dr. Pena.
It's a pleasure to be here, Ann.
Dr. Pena will be speaking at a program on obesity, global pandemic, local crisis, at noon on Thursday at WOSU at COSI. For more information, go to the Columbus Council on World Affairs website. That's columbusworldaffairs.com. And we'll also post a link to that on our website at wosu.org/allsides. 614-292-8513 is the number to call if you'd like to speak with Dr. Pena. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. So, Dr. Pena, you're a physician, and you've been working as an expert on nutrition and poverty with the Pan American Health Organization for many years. When did the obesity epidemic come to your attention?
Well, exactly in the middle of the 80s, there was a permanent increase, the trends of obesity increase in a sharp way. But in the last 15 to 20 years, there has been skyrocketing levels in many countries, and mainly in developing countries.
Right. There's a big discrepancy. I mean, we know that in the United States, there is an obesity problem, an obesity epidemic in the United States. It's considered a public health problem in this country. What's the difference between the importance of understanding that it's in the developing countries as well as the developed countries?
Yes, Professor Albert Stonkert published in the early 50s a paper in which he stressed the importance of a level of poverty and the level of obesity. And he mentioned that in New York, that was one of the first reports, there was a high increase in the lower level of the people there. And afterward, this kind of expression has been seen in many developing countries. For instance, Mexico at this time is the country with the sharpest increase in obesity in the world. And now what we're facing in many Latin American countries is precisely that it has been reached almost 30% of the population. That is pretty high for those populations.
I mentioned at the outset that globalization is a factor in it. To what extent does globalization affect the rate of increase in obesity in the world?
Well, you know, this is a typical multifactorial issue. Mm-hmm. First, obesity starts when the energy balance, I mean, the calorie that you receive are higher than the one that you expend. This is the basics of obesity. But there are many factors that control that. Of course, education is crucial. When a mother is well-educated and the whole family knows how to take care of the children, the proper food and so on, is something that is very important. However, there are many socioeconomic factors that are associated to this and very environmental factors. You could have a lot of education. You can know what to eat. But if you cannot afford it, it's practically impossible to have as healthy nutrition.
So what has changed that people can no longer afford to eat what they used to eat and expend? I mean, again, you said it's a balance. Maybe they're not as active either. It's a combination of things. But what's affordability have to do with it if they're just eating the same old thing they've always eaten?
That's a good question because there is a limit up to what can you do from the individual and family perspective. That's why we are knocking the doors now for politicians and decision makers that we need to change the obesogenic environment that we have developed. In other words, you have to start working with the different food industry, how to bring down first the fats lot of refined carbohydrates such as sugar and salt, and how we can, and we need to work with a marketing, adequate marketing procedure. Otherwise, we are really swamping the whole community, mainly the poor people, of negative products that promote obesity.
It seems like a lot of products that you're talking about, highly processed products, you know, whether it's a box of Fruit Loops or anything else is processed with a lot of sugar or whatever in it, would be more expensive than what you can just get locally and that is more basic.
You know, there has been several papers recently published that associated the problem of obesity to the highly processing of many foods. 100 years ago, our grandmothers and our mothers, mainly, they cooked natural foods. The consumption of fruits and veggies
and things
was
you got locally
pretty high. Mm-hmm. But at this time, with the incorporation of women, mainly to the labor issues and so on, there has been, you know, a lot of pressure how to prepare food, adequate food, palatable, but with difficulties in time. And then the food technology start to doing many things. First, for preservation, they start hydrogenating polyunsaturated fats. Then the problems of trans fats that everybody knows that is extremely negative for health and so on. So, and then the quantity of many of the nutrients that are thermolabile, I mean with thermolability, that when it's higher than 40 degrees centigrade, it is destroys many of these nutrients, for instance, vitamin C, folates, and so on, creates an amount of food that is not really nutritious. And the other problem is that the level of energy, high density energy of products with a very low nutrient, I mean iron, zinc, calcium, that is something that you may find very commonly.
In the United States, there are a lot of regulations now about about notifying consumers about what's in the food they eat. Is it the same way around the world, even if it's an American producer or processor of food, do they follow the same rules that are imposed on them in the United States around the world, or is it different?
Well, last September, there was a United Nations General Assembly, a special session dealing with obesity and non-communicable disease. And as a matter of fact, obesity is a risk for non-communicable disease and is a non-communicable disease itself. Mm-hmm. And precisely in that meeting, there was a gathering of all chief of states just to tackle the problem of obesity and non-communicable disease with a different perspective. This is not a matter of public health or of the ministries of health of the countries or the Secretary of Health. The matter of a general population, the civil society, and the governments. That's why, really, the United States has been very actively, and we really support all what has been done in the last years regarding the school initiative, how to promote physical activity and to control a lot of these junk foods in the schools, and just to promote more veggies, fruits, and other healthy foods. This is something that, of course, we are strongly following, and the government of the United States is working together as a member of the WHO and the Pan American Health Organization.
But General Mills, for instance, they produce all those cereals, and they have to show what's in each cereal on the side of the box. Do they do that in their products that they ship around the world?
Well, yes, but let me tell you, and this is something that we are now pushing, sometimes the food industry just shows what they are interested, not the whole amount of information.
Okay.
There are many cereals that are rich of sugar that are not healthy at all. It says a lot of fiber, no, but the amount of sugar added is totally counterproductive.
And trans fats is another great example of
trans
that.
Trans fat is another. Salt is another problem. Mm-hmm. And therefore, and the other topic that is critical is the sugar sweetened beverages that, you know, practically many of the children are drinking that kind of beverage instead of water.
Dose, yeah.
I mean, all the sodas and mm-hmm. even juice that right. are packed, you know, that a lot of sugar, 40% of the calories that they receive are totally lacking of any nutrient. And this is the most contributor is precisely this sugar-sweetened beverage.
My guest is Dr. Manuel Pena. He's a representative. Well, he's coordinator of Alliance for Pan-American Nutrition and Development for the World Health Organization. He'll be speaking tomorrow if you want more information about that in Columbus. go to WOSU.org/allsides. Rose, you're
Hello.
In the campus area. Hi, Rose. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm so glad you're doing this topic. As Dr. Pena said, I think the problem of obesity is multifactorial. One factor I wonder about, and I don't know that anyone's doing research on it, American meat producers add antibiotics and female hormones in order to put weight on their animals faster. They fatten up faster when they're on those two substances. We then ingest that meat, and I wonder if that isn't a contributor to why people are putting on so much weight.
Dr. Pena?
Yes, it's a very interesting comment. And let me tell you that this is something that we have to really work on it. The use of antibiotics in cattle just to promote and to avoid diseases there is creating just not only a nutritional problem, but a problem with the use of antibiotic and posterior resistance of different bacteria that could have a very negative impact on the whole population. First. Second, the use of hormones is just, of course, another critical problem because, you know, this kind of hormones in many ways retain water and having a lot of sodium inside, and that's something just to increase the weight of this meat, and it's also a negative way. This is something that should be regulated very carefully, and this is a part of the things that has been discussed recently in different settings and different meetings, such as the Aruba meeting on obesity that took place in June, and the Mexican meeting that took place in February this year, and as part of the preparatory action for the General Assembly.
So we know scientifically that the hormones that we feed the livestock can be transferred to humans that consume the meat, and or is that still not clear?
It's not totally clear.
Okay.
The problem is not the hormone itself that is attacking the individual. The problem is that the cattle or the livestock that you are consuming is totally distorted of the usual pattern. Let's say, if we're thinking about the animals in the Paleolithic nutrition, they were totally different from now, and that's why obesity was not seldom was only seldomly seen in those populations as far as the Paleolithic studies have been done.
Because we haven't changed that much since then.
Of course, and now you will see that the cattle is constrained in different spaces; they cannot move. That produce a lot of fat depots and a lot of distortion of the structure of these foods.
Rose, thanks for your call. My guest again, Dr. Manuel Pena. He's coordinator of Alliance for Pan-American Nutrition and Development for the World Health Organization. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, if you'd like to join our conversation about obesity around the world. It is in an epidemic proportion now. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org, and you can go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page and put your question or comment there. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
This is 89.7 NPR News. And just a reminder, in 2 days on Friday, December 9th at 5 p.m., WOSU will no longer broadcast on 820 a.m. To hear your favorite programs, tune to 89.7 NPR News, where you can listen to All Sides with Ann Fisher, Fresh Air, On Point, and all of your favorite shows. You can also stream NPR and local news programming anytime online at WOSU.org. Using your computer or mobile device. And be sure to set your radio dial to 89.7 FM after this Friday, December 9th.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Ohio Department of Health. The Ohio Medical Reserve Corps is looking for medical and non-medical volunteers who are ready to help Ohioans when disaster strikes. More details at ohioresponds.gov.
34 degrees in downtown Columbus. Cloudy skies today, a high of 40. Partly cloudy tonight, a low of 27. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. My guest is Dr. Manuel Pena. He is coordinator for the Alliance. For the Alliance for Pan American Nutrition and Development for the World Health Organization. He's speaking in Columbus tomorrow. You can go to our website at wosu.org/allsides and get a link to that if you'd like to know more. Right now, Mohammed in Columbus, you're on the air. Okay, I guess not. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. I guess we'll have to wait for Mohammed. Let's talk about what we talked about, how the obesity issue is a problem in developing countries just as much, if not more, as they are in developed countries and wealthy countries like the United States. But not all of them are the same. Africa, for instance, is not as impacted by obesity. What's the difference? Why is that?
And there are different critical stages just for in the problems of obesity in the world. The critical periods are first all the prenatal factor. The fetal development is a crucial aspect in the development of obesity and non-communicable disease afterwards. If a child or if a mother, let's say, is too young, it's something that very critically seen in many countries, Latin America and Africa, of course, the highly likelihood that this fetus will be undernourished is very high. Mm-hmm. Why? Because there are two bodies that are at the same time growing and consuming a lot of nutrients. That creates that the fetus starts adapting itself just to try to survive to this negative condition from the nutritional point of view. As soon as you get, and this has been evidenced by many studies, David Barker was one of the pioneers of this, that is the fetal programming, that the adaptation creates something that when this girl or boy is born and start receiving a lot of food that was not programmed since they were living with many limitations at the beginning of the conception and so on, creates a chaotic metabolic issue. And this comes to the obesity epidemics that we are now seeing in many countries. Therefore, the prenatal aspects are crucial. The other critical period is the first 2 years of life. Something that we have seen is a decline in breastfeeding. Exclusive breastfeeding for the first 6 months of life is one or perhaps the most important promotional action that we can say for the development and health for children.
Why has there been a decline in breastfeeding?
Well, I think that one of the critical issues has been the involvement of women in many works, labors, and therefore
that women have to go
time
to work.
But also, the problem has been the food industry. Baby food industry has promoted very strongly, those kind of milks that they say that are very close to the quality of the human milk, and that's not true. Therefore, this has been something that has been distorted. The marketing of this kind of product has been something very negative. And these are the two main reasons in which the breastfeeding is. There is practically no country reached the 50% level of breastfeeding up to the first 6 months of life. This is something that we are going to present tomorrow. And the other issue is about the complementary feeding. The weaning foods that you are given to the child. When you are not using natural products and you use only ultra-processed, it's not the same. And perhaps they have a higher amount of sugars and other nutrients that are not really healthy in this sense. These are two. And the third period is what I'm saying about childhood and adolescence, the overconsumption of high-calorie foods, mainly sugar-sweetened beverages, and the other one that is something also that is critical at this time. And we're going to present very interesting data tomorrow in which many countries, and of course Africa, though they are experiencing, the critical acute malnutrition, they are also exhibiting an increase of obesity because the survivors of those acute malnutrition turn obese if they are really exposed to such a negative environment from the physical activity point of view, because of violence and all that, and of course of the quality of food that they receive afterwards.
Mohammed in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Mohammed.
Thank you, Anne, for having me. I wanted to highlight that even though we are faced with obesity as a serious pandemic issue, the issue of hunger is still affecting some other parts of the world.
Right.
I wanted the local Somali community is doing a lot of fundraising, raising awareness about what's happening in East Africa with the famine.
In Somalia.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So if your listeners are interested in helping out, they can participate at one of the fundraising dinners that's being held tonight, Soleil Bistro Restaurant, or next Wednesday at 7 p.m.
Is there a website that people can go to get the information?
Yes. You can go to soleilbistro.com or call in 614-440-3177.
Soleilbistro.com?
Yes.
Or 614-440-3177 to get more information about a series of fundraising dinners. They're buffets with Somali food, right?
Yes, Somali cuisine.
Okay, and if you want to participate and learn more about that, again, you can go to our website at wosu.org/allsides, and we'll have the links and the phone number for you there. Mohammed, thanks for calling. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
So when you're talking about Africa, it's the body going through the malnutrition phase of the wars and the famines that they're going through, and then after that, being fed all these unhealthy foods, they just can't process it? Or what's the problem? I mean, it seems like high-caloric foods, even if they're bad for you, would be better than nothing.
Well, this is a critical problem, let me tell you. Perhaps the Latin American background has been a little more clear just to compare that. If you find, let's say, a country in which malnutrition is very common, as I mentioned, because malnutrition is not only limited to food or physical activity, it depends on a lot of factors associated with the sexual behavior. Mm-hmm. If women, as I mentioned, become pregnant very soon, I mean 14, 15 years.
While they're still growing.
This is one of the critical reasons of developing malnutrition very early, even prenatally speaking. Second, the problem of water quality, the problem of all the sewage that are lacking in many countries, the problem of the quality of the household. These are factors that conspire against inadequate health and about care of children. If those children, after, of course, they are born, or before, that's the fetal life, are experience such a negative external factors, are starting all this kind of adaptation that, as I mentioned. And when these children are survivals of those negative factors and start having low physical activity, bad quality of food, and a lot of energy, it practically creates a disaster. That's why what we are seeing now is a very sharp increase, not only in obesity, in hypertension, in diabetes, some cancer, and osteoporosis in many poor countries. Africa experiences this problem, but of course they have first a high level of AIDS epidemics. That is something that practically is very critical in terms of the life expectancy of people. And of course the famine is not a problem just to receive high-calorie foodstuffs. The most important is nutrients, micronutrients, iron, zinc, nutrients that are especially and essential for an adequate growth and health.
You're just joining us. It's All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. And my guest is Dr. Manuel Pena. He is coordinator of Alliance for Pan-American Nutrition and Development for the World Health Organization. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. If you'd like to join our conversation. And Alex in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Alex.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
My question for the doctor is, right now a lot of the produce in the United States comes not only from out of state, but typically out of country. And these produce is usually picked too ripe, and then it's packaged and then sprayed with phosphorus gas in order to appear ripe, to change color. I was wondering if, since these produce are usually picked too ripe and don't develop the nutrients, if even eating produce nowadays that travels a very long distance is even beneficial for someone.
Yeah, sure. Hi, Dr. Pena.
Yes, let me tell you, when we're talking about the consumption of natural products, despite that it could have some alteration due to the long term of packing and so on, it's much better than to have those fruits ultra-processed in which you practically destroy all important nutrients and so on. And of course, if you ultra-process it, you start adding different preservatives and you start adding sugar just to, you know, make it more palatable and so on. Therefore, I think, of course, the problem of bringing export and import of foods is something that we have to promote more local food producers. But what I mean is what it is really critical is the term of the ultra-processing of foods.
To what extent, and Alex, thanks for your call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
To what extent, though, does this demand for what we would think of as exotic fruits and vegetables from around the world, you know, we can afford them here. We can afford to have them shipped here regardless, you know, you may or may not like what happens to them on the way. But what happens to the people who are growing them? I mean, isn't there, aren't there examples? And there's also a big, big, big demand for corn in countries that used to have it as a staple and now can't afford it to feed it to themselves anymore because they're so busy producing it for the United States. What about that impact?
Well, you know, in the last years, there has been a strong support for the free trade agreements.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we respect, as a United Nations agency, all the sovereignty of countries and the decisions. But some say that can really play a negative role of this free trade agreement, if you do regulate and control, is that you start selling a lot of local products that your country produces. Let's say asparagus from Peru, that has been something very specific, are one of the best in the world. They find that it's very important to bring it to the United States market or the European market, and you start selling all the asparagus. And as part of this free trade agreement, you start exchanging other products, products that perhaps are not as nutritious
right.
as the asparagus. But of course, from the commercial point of view, it's much better, I mean, for an overall commercial aspect. And this is something that could be negative. That's why what is part of our responsibility and of the World Food Program and the FAO and IFPRI and many other international organizations is just to promote very wise political decisions in terms of what are the positive or negative aspects of this kind of trade. And so the other things, sometimes the growers have so many intermediary people involved that the amount of money that they could really get from their work is such a small amount. Therefore, if you start, let's say, a mango, important fruit in many countries, has increased the price 25 times in the last 10 years. And that's why, because I'm saying big producers, there are a lot of manufacturers, and then in the long run, the grower is still poor and they are not really stimulated to produce what they are, the necessary foodstuffs.
Jim in Licking County, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Yeah, I just wanted to say it seems like from the turn of the century all the way up to like the 40s, that people were smaller and healthier, and, you know, of course, that has to do with the activities of today, people with kids with video games and stuff like that. And also that the things like broccoli, you have to eat 10 times the amount of broccoli to get the nutrition that you used to get back then because of nutrition being stripped from the soils here in America. And I'd also like to point out that high-glucose corn syrup that they put in everything.
You mean high fructose?
Yeah, okay. It seems to have an adverse effect on kids. And then when they get overweight and obese, one problem just leads to another, from feet problems to heart problems to diabetes. It's just a nightmare.
Dr. Pena, thank you, Jim, for that call.
Yes, we've no doubt, and Jim, this is an excellent comment, we've no doubt during the 40s, people live more humanly. Of course, technology has really developed in many ways that has improved from the mainly a lot of technology from the medical side and so and so. But unfortunately, the use of corn syrup, and as you mentioned, high content in fructose, has it really impaired the natural metabolism of refined carbohydrate in many people. That is something that is effectively negative. Even we have heard that several sodas have changed their formula despite that the flavor is the same. Just to keep it longer time in the shelves and so on, practically distorts the quality of those products. And of course, as you mentioned, the problem of video games, the lack of sports, I mean outdoor games for children, the all the technological factors and the recreational time that they spend instead of having movement, physical activity, is mainly limited to electronics. And I am not against that. But what we need is really to balance all these factors, because otherwise we are having the scenario that we are now facing, that is a real increase of non-communicable diseases.
You know, some people say, well, I'm not obese. If somebody's going to abuse their body like that and not take care of themselves and not get enough exercise or eat the wrong foods, what does it matter to me? Why is it a public health problem?
You know, when we are talking about physical measurements, we have to be very careful, because if you apply only to the individual, you can promote even eating disorders such as anorexia that is also increasing, mm-hmm. or bulimia nervosa and so on. When we are using this kind of statistics, I mean, as Jim mentioned, the problem of that the American people and the world and worldwide were smaller 50 years ago, in some way, it is not bad to be. I mean, it's not a matter. When we see that in Africa or Latin America, there is a large proportion of children that they don't even reach the theoretical amount of height, because it's an expression of negative conditions. But to be short is not the problem. It's to becoming short. If you are programmed genetically to reach 6 foot and then you can only reach 5'7", it means that there were negative factors within your person or due to environmental factors or genetic factors that impair that issue. But what we are talking is really the effect in the population-wise. And in this sense, it's critical just to approach that kind of problems. I mean, how to control the environment that goes beyond individual people. If you are fat, you have to become first to prevent complications, to try not to bring down your energy intake, to promote physical activity, but also it's not enough from the public health perspective. We need to tackle other factors in the environment. Let's say if you have a child and there is a franchise that promotes the selling foods that are not really needed at that time because use of external cues and so on, this is something to be regulated. And these are the factors that we are now discussing with different governments and are depending not in the individual. We cannot blame the victim. We need to open other spaces just that the control could promote better health from the environmental perspective.
My guest is Dr. Manuel Pena. He is coordinator of Alliance for Pan-American Nutrition and Development for the World Health Organization. He's speaking in Columbus tomorrow. If you want more information on that, go to our website at WOSU.org/AllSides. We'll have a link and so forth for you. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Three Steps to Incredible Health with Dr. Joel Fuhrman is a program that directly addresses the crisis of obesity and chronic disease plaguing America. Dr. Fuhrman's revolutionary health plan is about knowledge and offers a healthy and effective plan for shedding weight quickly and reclaiming the vitality and good health we all deserve. Three Steps to Incredible Health will help you live longer, reduce your need for medications, and improve your overall health dramatically. Watch Wednesday night at 9:30 on WOSU TV.
This is 89.7 NPR News in 20 minutes at 11 o'clock. Hour 2 of All Science begins with a discussion of the future of NPR. Joining the program will be NPR's new president and CEO, Gary Nell, along with the new NPR ombudsman. That discussion from 11 till noon on 89.7 NPR News.
Support for 89.7 comes from the state auto insurance companies providing home, automobile, and business insurance products and services to Central Ohioans since 1921. State Auto is on the web at stateauto.com.
35 degrees in downtown Columbus, cloudy skies, warming up to a high near 40 today. Partly cloudy tonight, a low of 27, mostly sunny for Thursday, and a high of 39, and then cloudy Thursday night, a low of 27. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about the worldwide obesity epidemic. It's a public health issue for everybody. Some places it's worse than others, but it's growing everywhere. Give us a call if you want to talk about that. My guest is Dr. Manuel Pena. He is coordinator of Alliance for Pan-American Nutrition and Development for the World Health Organization. The number is 614-292-8513 if you want to talk with Dr. Pena. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org, and you can go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page. There you can tweet us. At Ann Fisher, WOSU, if that suits you. So there has been a lot of talk lately about drugs that can cure people from being overweight and obesity. What do we know about those drugs, and are they something that could be applied to the problems that you're talking about, Dr. Pena?
Do you mean drugs to bring down the body weight?
Yeah, drugs, anti-obesity drugs.
Yes. The problem is that, first, there has not been any real successful treatment against obesity once it is established in a person. First, let me talk to you about bariatric surgery.
Okay.
In the cases that are extremely obese, the morbid obese subjects, let's say, that require something dramatic to bring down all these negative conditions for the body, it has shown that it can reduce body weight. But in the long run, you know, it takes more than a problem of body weight. It takes the adaptation from the metabolic perspective of that bodies that have been really programming in a different fashion. First. Second, the use of drugs. There has been some drugs that are not absorbed by the body, let's say Senecal, that interferes the absorption of fat. But these are something only supporters for short-term interventions, because people need to have a different approach in their life. They need to change not only the attitude, but the behavior toward food and toward the physical activity, daily physical activity. The other ones, there are a lot of sorts of drugs. Let's say any kind of hormonal hormones are really suggested for this treatment, because obesity is not an endocrine problem in general. Very seldomly seen specific syndromes. But the obesity that we're facing worldwide is a matter of a factor that are mainly environmentals and nutritional physical activity. Second, the use of other drugs that increase metabolism for a short term
diet pills
requires individually the casuistic approach for each patient. But this is not the solution. The solution requires a much wider approach. And, of course, these are the limitations.
Is there any concern that drug companies are pushing drugs for the, you know, anti-obesity drugs in places, you know, just like they're pushing, you know, overprocessed foods?
Well, I don't think that is the same. Okay. What we are seeing from the pharmaceutical labs and those with the food technology and food industry, I think it is different, because there are many controlled trials, randomized controlled trials currently underway and are conducted by very outstanding scientists and so on. And there is a wide diffusion of information, the dissemination out of these studies. The problem of drugs, I don't think they are pushing. Of course, this is a matter that is very sensitive, but I don't think this is a matter of, you know, as it has been seen in many of the food industry.
Abba?
Yes.
In Columbus, welcome to the show.
Yeah, good morning. Nice program.
Good morning. Thank you.
I have a quick question, actually, about obesity in Africa. When the doctor was explaining obesity in Africa, is he talking about urban cities in Africa or rural areas in Africa? Because majority of population of Africans live in the rural areas, and they grow their food. Basically, it's today what we can term as organic.
Mm-hmm.
And so from that perspective, I want the doctor to explain to us, using his vast experiences, is it urban Africa or rural Africa that he's talking about? Thank you.
Well, in rural Africa, that's a very interesting point. There are many growers of natural food and consumers. The problem there, that is something that limits the factors upon health, are the other environmental factors that play a negative role. Let's say the problem of food safety, the contamination of different foods. But in general, we will find in many countries of in rural areas practically very small incidence of obesity on the one hand, and you also find that if they are practicing breastfeeding exclusively for 6 months, those children can grow safely, and of course with all the immunization and the basic condition, they can grow with a very safe way. Of course, the matter comes afterwards in terms of the income of the families and all these environmental factors. But in general, those staple foods are really very healthy, and they do not require any kind of process and are nutritious.
Thanks a lot for the call. We have an email from Chris. He or she writes, we adopted our youngest child from Paraguay in 1994. The formula that was bought in the stores there produced by Nestle was horrible. It was just a lot of sugar added to dry milk. This was a completely different product than was sold in the United States. These Latin children are now adults, possibly with the weight problem that is being discussed today. Is that the sort of thing you're talking about, Dr. Pena?
One of the factors, mm-hmm. indeed. You may find that, you know, when the children, the babies, are not breastfed, mainly the first 6 months of life, this is something that could pay a problem afterwards, first. Second, the amount of sugar added to all those baby foods is also a matter that is very common because of the pressure of the family. You know, they buy, you know, that kind of food, and they do not prepare as it was done years ago at home. This adding of different substances I mentioned and preservative are substances that are not programmed for our human kind of life, you know. And of course, in Latin America, what you may find is first, very low levels of breastfeeding. Although it has increased in some countries such as Peru, it still is pretty low. Second, the amount of sugar that is added, because there are different cultural patterns of feedings. Many countries, mainly in the Caribbean, add a lot of sugar. They love sugar. And in the case of Africa and many other countries, even there is a cultural pattern of beauty that associates obesity or fatness to beauty.
Aesthetically, it's not.
Aesthetically. But you know why? Because those who were obese when there were famines survived. Therefore, it was a positive attribute. But we're not talking now a survival from that point of view. Where then these are cultural factors that also should be worked upon just to try to start changing and to develop more a culture of health and well-being.
Beth in Clintonville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Beth. Okay, we have an email from Nora. This question is inspired by a presentation I saw of Rebecca Salm Casalanos' research on food provisioning and agri-food change. What is the World Health Organization doing to ensure that women are not disproportionately blamed for food choices and access? How can discussions of obesity be balanced so that men are held equally accountable for food preparation?
I don't know exactly. The evidence that are can quantitatively speak about this dichotomous behavior, but what we can say is that, you know, food marketing and the marketing that has been used by the food producers and the not only from the food producer but the food industry is extremely sharp. And let's say the promotion of this kind of food, even in the Caribbean, there were food that was mentioned to have different positive effect on the shape of women, that there were practically nonsense. Of course, this is not has not been disseminated by any kind of responsible industry. But that is something that that plays an important role. But something that, let me tell you, that is also being tackled in many countries is that if you take into account the marketing factors, you will see that in many supermarkets, all those products that are sweet and are attractive for children are put in the lower shelves. And this is part of an attraction for children just to push their fathers and to press to their parents just to buy this kind of products. And this is something that, you know, we have to be very careful. People working in public health and in generally, sometimes we are naive sending our messages. We need to identify what are the messages that are really kind of to decode the scientific basis, but to promote changes in attitude and behaviors and just to change this obesogenic environment that we're facing.
Beth in Clintonville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Beth.
Thank you. I was just going to say that in Argentina, some of the farmers have moved away from doing the grass farming that they've been known for doing for a long time, mm-hmm. the gauchos, and are doing the factory farming because it's cheaper, and it's changing the way that people eat in a negative way. So how do we, as a country, stop exporting some of these really bad things that we've adapted for ourselves in America and brought to other countries and other cultures? And I'll just listen off the air.
Okay, thank you, Beth. You talked about that a little bit earlier when we were talking about exporting fruits from
yes.
far away.
Well, you know, the problem is that the way that we lived 200 years ago in small farmers growing their own crops and so on was very smart. I mean, but as soon as the industrialization takes place, then this market were totally disappeared and they started big enterprises. Then you see acres and acres full of corns and, you know, starting putting a lot of chemicals just to avoid the crops. And you know, practically that's, that kind of monopolization of agriculture in different products creates such a mess that we're now facing. Of course, how are we able to change that is a critical factor that is now open in discussion, because so far we haven't seen any positive experience anywhere regarding that. The problem of the industrialization of all the food development, even from the agriculture, has been really so far not very enthusiastic from the results, the points of views.
You talked earlier about just the location of the high sugar cereals, and they're located at eye level with children, not with the adults that are purchasing, and they're playing to the children and marketing it to them. Is that part of what came out of the Sydney Principles? They're called the Sydney Principles. In 2006 in Sydney, Australia, the International Obesity Task Force developed a set of principles to protect children against the commercial promotion of food and beverages. Is that what they were talking about there?
Yes. Well, there has been several meetings. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you, in Aruba, in the meeting that was organized by the Minister of Health there, Dr. Visser, and the Pan American Health Organization, was discussed about it. Afterwards, in Valparaiso, in the month of October, there was a summit in which there will be even different proposals just to add taxes for all the products that are not really nutritious. Specifically, I'm talking about sugar-sweetened beverage. There is some presentation that if you add 20% of tax to each of it, the amount of money that you can really bring to the health promotion is very high. There are many, many initiatives now currently underway just to identify that. And this is something that I think we are not going to talk or to be so aggressive as has been against the tobacco industry, in which
I was just going to compare it to the syntax on beer and alcohol cigarettes.
It's not the same because you need to eat. You don't need to smoke at all. And then what we need is just to have some exchange. But we cannot give to the food industry the regulatory actions, the regulation of the quality of foods and the regulation of the production of foods should be a matter of the government. It's not a matter of the government, the state, civil society, and the academia, of course, all the level of research. But you cannot give exactly to the industry the regulatory factors because, therefore, you know, it's incorrect from that side. And the syntax is something that has been promoted in many countries. Scandinavian countries, the lower the fat level of the milk, the cheaper it is. And this is something that we need to learn from most of these approaches.
An email from Diana. I have heard it all my life. What you are saying is not new. I believe we all know it. Eating vegetables as part of a sensible diet and exercise have always been known to promote health. But why can't we do it? I do eat a sensible diet and exercise, but I know so many people complaining about their weight and their children's health, but they still eat junk food and fast food all the time. Until we can figure out how to do it and not just know it, we won't get healthy.
The problem is not only knowledge. The problem is conditions just to live a healthy way, in a healthy lifestyle. Sometimes the term lifestyle is not enough because you could have an excellent lifestyle, but if you don't have living conditions, you are not going to be healthy. Let's say you could have a lot of knowledge. You know how important it is to have fruits and vegetables. But if you go by the street and you start seeing a franchise, a cafeteria, and having a burger there with a soda, and start responding to different stimuli that are not mainly individual and from the nutrition perspective, but to the social and marketing, you start distorting your behavior. And this is something that sometimes is unconsciousness.
Dr. Manuel Pena, thanks for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Has been a great pleasure to be with you, and thanks a lot for having me here.
Dr. Pena is representative, and he's a coordinator of the Alliance for Pan-American Nutrition and Development for the World Health Organization. He's speaking in Columbus tomorrow. For more information, go to WOSU.org/allsides. And thanks for listening. This is All Sides for Ann Fisher, with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.